Greetings, Nation! We just tuned in with another episode of your favorite podcast, Phenomena Nations, spewing the truth since 2018. I'm your host, Max Pacheco.
Ladies, beware.
And today, we're going to be... I'm actually recording this about a month in advance, give or take. Cat. Because the Scary Story episodes is a Scary Story episode, if you didn't know already. These are the ones that take the most time to prepare. And also, you know last Halloween's? That I was working on that since like June, so I have a really late start on this one. I wasn't sure if I was going to do it, but you know, I decided to. I found a few good shorter stories that I hope you like. And you know, I don't really have a scary story reading voice, but I just do it more for the pleasure of reading it for my podcast and less for what I think it'll sound like. I try to make my best to make it sound good with music and stuff. But actually we have different music this one. I'm going to have the link to them. It's by a band called Haunted Corpse. There's some of the songs from them. Good music, I am obligated to say. Same with the intro song, Suddenly It Occurs to Me There's No Ocean Here. I have to say that they are in no way do they condone what I say on here. I'm just obligated to say that. And yeah, anyway, we hope you enjoy. I don't want to keep you any longer, so let's get right to it.
Midnight Cancer.
Have you ever had one of those feelings that something was wrong? I don't mean during the day either, but at night. I mean that sudden, unprovoked feeling of dread that commands you to wake. Funny, it's almost like nocturnal evil gives something off that your sleeping brain picks up on. I had one of those recently. It forced me up at 3 a.m. Normally, when you have that feeling, you'd lie still, feigning sleep. Or, if you're feeling adventurous, you'd take a quick check around the house. After you failed to discover anything, you'd inevitably crawl back to sleep. I should have done that this time. I should have stayed asleep. That night, I sat straight up. For the longest time, I sat there staring into the dark of my house, before I even realized that I was awake. Then came the fear, the slow, strangling feeling that constricts your chest and worms its way down your throat. I was alone in my home, wide-eyed and afraid, with no explanation. I couldn't hear the telltale signs of a break-in downstairs or the phantom sounds of a leaking pipe. I had no reason to be freaked out, but I was. Without much thought, I got up and walked over to the window. I don't know why I did. I peeled back just enough of the curtain to poke my head through, and I stared out into my moonlit backyard. I should have stayed asleep. Outside, prancing around my garden was a clown. It had ruffles around its sleeves and collar, baggy pants, and floppy shoes. Its painted white face was even topped off with a big red rubber nose. It was, without a doubt, the last thing I wanted to see at 3 a.m. It danced, in complete silence, doing a step that only a madman or child could understand. Its playful manner was haunting. I watched with dreadful fascination as it circled the garden, trying my best to ignore the lump growing in my throat. It moved around, pausing occasionally to play with my gardening tools or sniff the budding plants. Then it waltzed over to an oak sapling I had planted and disappeared. I blinked. This was impossible. It walked behind the thin infant plant but didn't come out the other side. I should have seen it the entire time, but I didn't. It was like the clown had walked through a door hidden by the sapling. I should have stayed asleep. I hope that everything was some sort of waking dream. Pretending nothing happened was easier than the truth. The clown came back, though, night after night. I watched as it danced around my backyard, and at the end of every night, it would vanish the same way. One night, it disappeared behind a garden hoe, only for it to appear seconds later from behind the lawnmower. Tonight, I found it digging a hole in the middle of the yard. I've never seen it do something like this before, and my immediate thought was the clown was digging my grave. The hole got deeper and deeper as the clown dug, until the top of the hole reached his head. Once finished, it stood at the edge of the hole motionless, when out of nowhere, its hand jerked its head around. My heart pounded so hard that I could taste the copper in my mouth. I'm about to tear away from the curtain when I see it bend down and pluck a flower. The clown put the stem between its teeth and planted the shovel firm in the ground before stretching out, pretend suspenders, and admiring his work like a farmer. My heart was still racing at this point, but I was just glad that it didn't see me. As if the thing read my mind, it turned on its heel and stared right at me. I never thought I'd actually pray for a heart attack. It spit out the flower and ran towards me, its feet flopping to the sides. It stopped feet from the house, grinning at me with the filthy orange teeth as it pointed to the hole and waved me over excitedly, like a child showing off a finger painting. Frozen in place, the only thing I could do was furiously shake my head no. The clown's smile fell, and it scratched his head as if confused. Then it walked over to the hole and pointed at it again. I would have told it to buzz off if I could. It stood there for a moment before animatedly reaching out and laughing. It then waltzed over to the planted shovel and disappeared behind it. I stared, wide-eyed, hoping it would reappear in the yard like before. I silently prayed for this until the moment I heard my closet crack open. I should have stayed asleep. Written by Mr. Babas. Ooh, spooky. Anyway, that song that you just heard in the background of that story was called Maggot Corpse by Haunted Corpse. There should be a link in the description. Same to our opening theme song. Suddenly it occurs to me there's no ocean here by Artificial Intelligence in Texas. Anyway, I won't keep you guys for any longer than I have to. On to the next story. Oh yeah, I also should mention I'm gonna try and keep away from ads this episode. You might already have heard of the TV broadcast hijacking in Seneca, South Carolina. The story's gained pretty wide currency on the internet, and part of the broadcast is available on YouTube, assuming that it hasn't been taken down for whatever reason. For the uninitiated, the Seneca hijacking is one of the lesser-known broadcast signal intrusions. It was big news here, but the nation news media barely touched on it. Anyway, I've decided to jot down my impressions on the whole thing, even though other eyewitnesses have described it more eloquently than I could. I was home on winter break when it happened, making chemistry flashcards in front of the TV. No one else was around. After watching the umpteenth Law & Order rerun, I got bored and started channel surfing. A couple minutes later, I stumbled onto this crappy public access channel where, bizarrely enough, my old high school Latin teacher was reciting a poem while wearing this dorky three-cornered hat. I watched for a few minutes and had a good laugh. I remembered him as a pretty serious guy, not the sort of person who'd embarrass himself in public like this. When suddenly there was this staticky crackle and the screen cut to this multicolored test pattern. Before I had time to change the channel, there's another crackle and this weird cartoon shows up on the screen. The animation style was detailed but kinda jiggly and rough. It reminded me of those old anti-drug PSAs. Anyway, it seemed normal enough at first. An ordinary looking middle class family eating breakfast together at a round kitchen table. There was a mom with an old-fashioned hairdo, a dad, two cherub-faced kids, a boy and a girl, all very Norman Rockwell. This family's making banal small talk, and the dad complains about his day at the office, the kids prattle on about soccer practice, and so on. Gradually, though, the scene starts to get slightly sinister. A green light is seeping through the window, and the family starts to acquire a jaundiced, unhealthy look. Their skin changes color and their eyes become sunken. In the background, a droning radio broadcast slowly becomes perceptible. The announcer gives the date as November 15th, 2017, and starts to go on about how some strange crisis. You can barely hear what he's saying. He says something about a green light, melting flesh, mutations, strange shapes emerging from the sea, again and again. The phrase, "Report to the nearest shelter immediately," is audible. Still, the family keeps eating breakfast as if nothing was happening. And here's where it gets really macabre. The family finishes eating breakfast and the mom loads the kids into the minivan, but now they look really unhealthy. Their bodies are skeletally thin, the whites of their eyes are a sickly yellowish color, and their hair is disheveled. The car drives through a landscape bathed in green glow from before. Strange shapes bob in and out of the screen, but you can't quite tell what they are. And all the buildings the car passes look weathered and deserted. Finally, the car stops at a playground and the mom drops off the kids before driving away. There's a large, odd, colored rocks all over the ground and moaning can be heard in the distance. The kids hang mirthlessly off the monkey bars for a while. Eventually, the camera pans over the playground and you see that the rocks littering the ground aren't rocks at all, but naked human forms, horribly disfigured. They seem to be either growing onto or from the ground. I can't say which. And they are very much alive. Behind the monkey bars, a tree can be seen with a human face growing from the trunk. Its features are writhing and contorted in agony. The scene suddenly shifts to a white collar office where the children's father is stooped over a desktop, typing away. His features are as sunken and diseased as that of the other family members, and the office is covered in a green glow. In the other cubicles, fleshless corpses sit upright in their desks, frozen in death. Finally, we see the family return home for the evening, walking through the front door together. Their skin is no longer simply jaundiced, but actually melting off, dripping from their outstretched arms and running down their faces in drops. As they are literally falling to pieces, the family sits down in the dining room and begins wordlessly to eat dinner. Their flesh becomes more and more amorphous, ribbons of skin dangling from their bodies like the tendrils of an octopus. I can barely describe it, but they somehow begin to merge with the chairs they're seated on, or rather their skin grows over them. But now their skin has the consistency of melted ice cream, and they're barely recognizable as humans except for their eyes, which somehow remain intact. The camera zooms closer and closer to the table, and finally their eyes all move directly toward the camera, conveying a feeling of unfathomable sadness. The screen goes black and large white letters appear on the screen. Report to the nearest shelter immediately. Remaining at private residences is strictly prohibited. And with that, the screen turned to static. I stared in stunned silence for a few minutes before the banal local channel switched back on. And that's all I know, really. almost thought I was dreaming until the paper reported the story the next day. God knows what really happened. A ridiculously elaborate prank, an ill-advised viral marketing campaign. The crazier parts of the internet have their own theories. Well, that was a good song. That was a good story, too. The song in the background was called Zombie Plague by Haunted Corpse, and the story was called Broadcast Interruption. I'm going to be putting the link to the song and all the links to the stories, hopefully. And I'd just like to say, if there's any people who wrote the creepypasta listening or the story, I just want you to know, please don't sue me or anything for using your story. I just want people to hear your amazing writing. You know, that's just what I want to do. So that's just, I just want to say that. And also, I hope you like what I did with the opening theme song. I kind of slowed it down and add some echo to it to make it a little bit more creepy. So we're just gonna read another one. I don't want to keep you for any longer than I have to, like I said. And let's go. Just a quick little correction. The song is not called Zombie Plague, it's called Plague of Zombies. Just so you know.
There's something wrong with my cat.
My cat is acting a bit off. She's a rescue, so of course we have a couple of kinks to work out. This is a little more than that, though. She started by scratching the walls, completely disregarding the perfectly good scratching post right next to her that I spent like $20 on, but it seemed harmless enough, although they were rather high up on the wall. It wouldn't be any trouble to fix, though, just a simple matter of repainting. Then she started pissing on the floors, even though she had a perfectly good litter box that I clean daily. Daily! She is so just disrespectful, and she doesn't pay attention. And they weren't just your average cat-sized urine puddles. They were massive, impossibly large for the size of my cat. I was perplexed at the size of this and unsure of how to curb this behavior. I tried doing a Google search, checking pet owner forums, but all the remedies I found didn't seem to help at all. Was it something I was going to have to accept and live with? Maybe another way of marking her territory or a strange thing she picked up from the previous owner? I didn't know anything about the cat before I brought her home. She was pretty small, somewhat malnourished and skittish, but overall seemed to be a pretty loving cat. I figured she came from an abusive or neglectful home, so I tried not to think too much about her life before me. As far as I was concerned, she had always been my cat. Then, the nighttime wailing began. I know what you're thinking, cats go crazy at night, it's a known fact. And that is true. But something about the way she meowed, the way she seemed to be calling out to something in groans that sounded more like some sort of lost language than a cat's meow, had sent shivers down my spine. She was something that resembled a song, rhythmic and repeating over and over again, all through the night. I just ignore it, forcing myself to lay in bed and accept what was happening just beyond my bedroom door. If I wasn't able to fall asleep, which seemed like it was just about every night, I'd have a bit of a chemical help in the form of an Ambien. The magic little sleeping pill made me go lights out in 20 minutes flat. I'd wake up in the morning to dead mice, rats, and even rabbits placed out in my just outside my bedroom door. Not my front door, no. These would be inside my house, sitting right outside my door as I stepped out in the morning to make a cup of coffee. The first one was unexpected, and naturally, I stepped right on its detached head. It crunched beneath my feet, sending brain matter, blood, and viscera shooting up between the toes and oozing out of the cracks between my toes. I nearly vomited, barely holding it back as I launched myself toward the bathroom. I searched my house up and down for any way she could have escaped. A cracked window, or perhaps the dryer vent wasn't secured properly. After hours of searching, I came up with nothing. My house was sealed tight. There was no way for her to escape. I thought that maybe she was just doing her job. She was a predator, after all. And she seemed to be a damn good hunter who kept my house free of unwanted critters and pests. I could live with that. I learned to keep an eye out as I exited my bedroom in the morning. Like clockwork, I'd wake up, exit my room at 7 a.m., and there they were. Like little gifts, their heads torn clean off their bodies and placed carefully to the side. My cat would simply sit on the armrest of the couch, watching and purring happily. It even looked like she had a little smile on her face. It was the cutest thing to see her happy, so proud of herself, that she was completing her task so efficiently. The next gift she left me was a bit bigger. When I stepped out of my room in my normal routine, just like any other day, I was greeted by a scene of gruesome horror. Blood splashed up on my walls, caked on all my furniture, and pooled up just in front of my door. My arms began shaking with a rush of anxiety that took hold of me and refused to let go. My breath became short and my heart threatened to leap from my chest. When I looked over at my cat, she seemed pleased like any other day. She purred happily, staring at me with a Cheshire Cat grin smug on her face. She was coated in bright red blood and had something floppy dangling from her mouth. When I looked down at the gift she had brought me, I nearly collapsed. My legs began to wobble, my vision blurred, and a deep-seated panic settled in my bones. It was my neighbor, Bill. He was lying on the floor. Just like every other gift she'd left me, he was placed meticulously on the floor with his head torn from his neck. I stared in frozen shock for what seemed like hours. A quick meow from my cat brought me back to my senses. This time I wasn't able to hold the bile in my stomach. This time I hurled it out, violently coating Bill's dead body in a thin layer of yellow stomach acid. It was incomprehensible, inexplicable, and inconceivable that my cat could do this. I put that aside, though. I had an issue to deal with, and there was no way the authorities would believe that my small little house cat could have done something like this. No one would. After scrambling around my house, shutting all the curtains and closing all the blinds, I found myself in a bit of a predicament. The only solution, obviously, was to clean things up. I started with the body. Best to get rid of the big hulking mass of man before it started to stink up the place. It wasn't difficult to get rid of either. I took a couple trash bags, sealed him up inside, and brought him out to my garbage. I popped open the trunk of my car and heaved him inside. The blood and guts were a little more of a challenge. My floors were coated in a thick, slowly hardening yellow of layer of bright red viscous fluid. My couches were definitely ruined. I'd have to get a new living room set before allowing anyone to come inside of my house. After hours upon hours of cleaning, things seemed to be in pretty good shape. I'd gotten stains out of the flooring for the most part. The new reddish-brown hue of the couch actually started to grow on me, and there was not a single speck of blood left anywhere in the house. As my dad would say, "You done good, kid." I heard my doorbell ring as I sat into the sofa. "Hey, James," the voice of my sister shouted through the door. "It's Trina, let me in." "Oh crap, I thought I'd
jumping in my feet. She told me a couple days ago that she was going to come by, and I completely forgot. One second! I shouted as I ran into my bedroom. I quickly stripped off all my blood-soaked clothes and threw on fresh garments. I examined myself in the mirror, adjusting my hair and checking for any blood that might be caked on my skin. Nothing I could see, though. I ran out and opened the door. Hey, sis, I said, opening it just enough for her to see me. Sorry, I completely forgot you were coming over. That's cool, she said, digging through her purse. She pulled out a piece of gum, unwrapped it, and began chewing. You gonna invite me in, or what? She laughed, pushing me aside and bursting through the door. Rude much. When she arrived in my living room, she stood there for a moment. I could tell by the way she stood with her hands on her hips and her head kinked to the side that she knew something had transpired here hours ago. She turned to me with a strange look about her, and my stomach dropped. She looked back in the living room again and pointed with her thumb. New couch? Huh? Oh, yeah, I started. I was caught off guard, but relief washed over me, showering me with a feeling of ease. I came up with a quick lie. Yeah, the damn cat scratched it up so bad, tore a hole right through the back of it. Just picked that one up yesterday. I walked over to the couch and plopped down, keeping a close eye on Trina. As I did so, she paused for a moment, confusion painted on her face. Then she began walking through the room, seemingly looking for something. She said, "But you don't have a cat." All right, that's that song you just heard in the background was called "The Vampire's Coffin" by Haunted Corpse. That was an okay story. You know, I liked it. It was short enough to add in. I didn't want to do anything over 10 minutes. But, you know. Anyway, yeah, that was "The Vampire's Coffin." There's going to be links to every single song in the description. And again, I have to disclose that they do not condone anything I say on this podcast. But they're free music. They're royalty-free music, so I thought I'd use that. Same with Artificial Intelligence in Texas. Suddenly it occurs to me there's no ocean here. Yeah. Anyway, won't keep you any longer. Next story.
Mr. Mix.
Does anyone remember an old PC game from the early 90s called Mr. Mix? It's mainly a typing game similar to Mario Teaches Typing, where you have to type the words into a box to make a... Unlike most typing games, however, the game is notorious for having an insane difficulty curve. The game has a words per minute requirement for each level, being as low as 10 on level 1 and as high as 85 on the third. By level 5, the requirement reaches over 500, effectively making it impossible to proceed any further. One of the main things that people noticed about this game immediately was the background music. The music on the first level was an unsettling pattern of growls that got progressively louder as the level went on, often causing damage to early computer speakers that were not designed to handle extremely high levels of volume. The second level had no music at all, and the third had what sounded like an extremely low quality recording of a hairdryer playing in the background. The remaining two levels had an extremely loud, high-pitched ringing throughout the level that caused severe eardrum damage to those who managed to get that far. Another rather disturbing aspect of the game was the design of Mr. Mix himself. He was a large, round-faced, overweight man with large, beady eyes and red spots on his cheeks. Most children who played the game reported having vivid nightmares of Mr. Mix speaking to them in a quiet, raspy voice and threatening them to keep quiet about something. However, none of them could remember exactly what that was. One psychologist who saw many of these children reported being disturbed by the sheer amount of terror on the faces of the children as they recounted the details of the nightmare.
Many of the children broke down into tears in the process, begging for their parents to save them. However, no direct relationship to the game itself could be determined by these few cases, as not all children suffered the same adverse effects. For obvious reasons, this game did not sell very well. It remained in relative obscurity until a few years ago, when PC hackers got a hold of a ROM of the game and started digging through it. Using memory hacking software, they managed to crack the game's code and bypass the impossible fifth level. What they found, however, was extremely disturbing, caused many of them to quit the expedition altogether. According to the reports these hackers left behind, the game behaves very strangely if the fifth level is bypassed. The game crashes violently and closes, writing a bunch of files to the user's System 32 directory to the point that the RAM was almost completely filled. These files are reportedly pictures of people with horribly deformed faces appearing to scream in pain and agony, with their eyes appearing to be bleeding from the tear ducts and the outer layer of skin torn clean off in multiple places. If the user attempts to delete these files, the computer will violently crash and blue screen, causing permanent irreparable damage to the user's hard drive. The hackers found that this was caused by a lone byte in the game's ROM that triggered when the fifth level was completed. After removing this byte, they were able to proceed to the sixth and final level. Unfortunately, all of the original hackers declined to discuss what they saw on the final level. All of them became extremely paranoid and reclusive, refusing to talk about anything related to the game and showing astonishingly extreme symptoms of PTSD. Most of them ceased to be able to form coherent sentences within a week, and within a month most of them went missing. All remaining copies of the game were destroyed. To this day, no one knows what was in that game and what caused them so much psychological damage. Maybe it's better that way. 2 years after this incident, a man was arrested after trying to kidnap an 8-year-old girl from a grocery store. Through DNA and fingerprint analysis, the man was identified as one of the original hackers who viewed the final level of the game. He was wearing a white chef's hat and had a look of unspeakable malice and insanity in his face. When interrogated, the man would only say one thing: "I'm Mr. Mix." That story will be in the description, same with the song that was in the background. It was called The Creature from Beyond the Grave by Haunted Corpse. Should be a link in the description. Yeah, so that was a pretty good story, I think. Not the best I've ever read, but, you know, it's pretty good. I'm not going to keep you for any longer again. Next story. The night it started, I woke up in a panic. I had heard a single knock on my bedroom door. I live alone. I called out but got no response. I was too afraid to open the door, so instead I opened the safe in my closet and retrieved the pistol from inside. I sat up all night watching the door, but another knock never came. The second night, I locked my door before I went to bed and left the pistol on my nightstand. Somehow, I was able to fall asleep. Again, I was awoken by a single knock. I sat up and pointed my pistol at the door. As I watched, too terrified to say anything, the lock turned, followed by the doorknob. The door creaked open a few inches and I saw a hand rise over the top of my door. It had 8 spindly fingers with long, gray nails. It waved for me almost 5 minutes. It stopped suddenly before it slithered its way up and over my door, into my room. Now coming over the top of my door was a long, thin, pale arm. It reached all the way down to the floor. After hanging there for a few minutes, it lifted up and waved at me again. Then it pointed at the doorknob, then at me. Back at me, to the doorknob. Me, doorknob, me, doorknob. The thin arm's eight-fingered spider-like hand lay flat with its palm up. It curled its fingers repeatedly into its palm. It was beckoning me. I couldn't move. Couldn't speak. I could hardly breathe. Then it held its arm up, as if checking a watch. It waved to me again, and slithered back up and over my door. The door closed and locked behind it. For the third night, I installed the bolt lock. This thing, whatever ghastly creature was attached to that thin arm, could somehow unlock my door. I hoped it couldn't do the same thing to the bolt. Unfortunately, it could. After hearing the knock, I had never fallen asleep. The bolt unlatched itself. Just after that, the arm slithered its way in and waved at me before pointing from me to the knob again. It beckoned me to the door once again before falling to the floor. For 3 hours, it drummed its fingers on the wooden floor. I was too terrified to do anything at all except stare. I occasionally looked at the clock, wishing that the morning would come. The arm eventually slithered its way out of my room. The door closed and locked, and so did the bolt. I slept for a couple of hours before my alarm went off. I knew I had to do something. I had to deal with whatever that thing was. On the fourth night, I didn't lock the door. I waited in front of it, pistol in hand. As soon as I heard the knock, I flung the door open. In front of me was nothing but an empty, dark hallway. There was nothing there at all. Was it done with me? Had I held out for long enough? Had it moved on to torture someone else? No. I'd laid back in bed and almost drifted off to sleep when I heard and felt a knock from beneath my bed. I opened my eyes but didn't move. I saw the arm lifting in the air above me, coming from under my bed. It waved just like it always did and patted me lightly on the head. I wanted to scream, but I couldn't. I wanted to get up and run away, but I couldn't. The arm wrapped around me. I was suddenly overcome with exhaustion. I fell asleep until my alarm went off. As I opened my eyes, the arm lifted up, waved to me, and went back under my bed. I got up and jumped as far off my bed as I could and ran into the hall. I got in the shower and noticed scratches all over my stomach and chest. They weren't deep enough to draw blood, but they stung when the hot water hit them. Luckily, I had clothes in the dryer and didn't have to go back into my room. I got ready for work and walked out to my car. I heard a knock just as I was getting into it. It was coming from my bedroom window, which was right above my driveway. The eight-fingered hand was there, waving. I never went back to my house that night. I rented a hotel room. Anxious to get a good night's sleep, I slept there all night. And I slept well. However, when I woke up and walked into the bathroom, I saw deep scratches on my chest. They weren't random scratches like from the night before. The words were jaggedly carved into me. I looked out at the bed and noticed the blankets and sheets were covered in dried blood. I looked back into the mirror to reread what it said. You let me in. You can't leave me. I can't leave you. No matter where I sleep, on the couch, in my car, even in my office, the arm is there. After a few days of trying out new places to sleep, I awoke to find a new message carved into me. Sleep in your bed, or I will make it so you never awake. Now, I lie awake every night until I hear the knock from under my bed. I always fall asleep right after that. It goes back under my bed in the morning. I always notice fresh scratches on my chest and stomach as I shower. Often they are on my legs and arms, too. Just the other night, I saw teeth marks on my shoulder. Whatever it is under my bed, more than just its arm is coming out when I sleep. I warn you, if you hear a single knock on your bedroom door, don't open it. When the arm slithers its way over the top of the door, try your best to ignore it. Put the pillow over your head, hide under the covers, and wait for it to go. I'm not sure if it will leave you for good, but it's better to leave it at your door. Above all, hope and pray that the thin arm with its 8-fingered hand doesn't knock. The story, link to the story, will be left in the description. The thin arm and the link to the song in the background, Severed Head Speaking, will also be left in the description. Just in case you wanted to use it or you just like to listen to it. Good music for scary stories. If I do say so myself, I really do like Haunted Corpses music. It's good for scary stories, I think. Yeah, so we're just gonna go to, do another story. I don't want to hold you. Let's just get right to it.
Channel Infinity.
There's a legend circulating around the television industry. It's about Channel Infinity. Channel Infinity is hard to get to, and reports vary as to what it actually is. I will tell you how to get there, and then what to do. Acquire a television, preferably with analog for the best experience, and the older, the better. Acquire a remote control, it doesn't have to go with the TV you're using. Turn on the TV, and set it to a channel that is static or just a plain black screen. If you are using a digital TV, basically any channel you do not receive. Leave the room for about 3 hours. If you have a significant other in the house, have them with you. It is also best to call over a few friends. During those 3 hours, you should acquire a few items. I will list them in order from most important to least. Note, none of these are mandatory, but they help. You will want an item that you hold dear, 2 handheld mirrors, a firearm or other weapon, a favorite book, a mobile communications device, a key, a sledgehammer or pickaxe. After roughly 3 hours have passed, re-enter the room. Have everyone else wait outside the door. Close the door. Stare at the static or blank screen or whatever you set the TV to until you feel disoriented or freaked out. Call the others into the room. Give the item that you hold dear to the person that you care about most in the room, then send them back out. If you did not grab an item that you hold dear, hug the person and whisper a secret in their ear. Send them back out and command them to not come in no matter what, until you open the door again. Note, this will be harder for them if there are more of them. But it will be safer for you if there are more people. Trust me. Hold the mirrors so that one is reflecting the television screen into the other, and the second screen is reflecting you, so it looks as if the television is behind you. Stay like this until a question appears on the screen. If you did not grab the mirrors, then sit in a chair facing away from the TV until you hear a noise. Grab the remote. There will be a question on the screen. Press channel up to answer yes, channel down to answer no. There will be anywhere from 3 to 26 questions.
if reports are to be trusted. The questions will be anywhere from trivial to deep philosophical questions. Answer truthfully, or you will not succeed in reaching Channel Infinity. After the questions, one of three things will happen. Your favorite show of all time will come on, but in the episodes, all of the characters will be heart-wrenchingly killed. You will see a picture of your least favorite person or thing ever. This is where you use the firearm or other weapon. Break the TV screen with the weapon. Then it will fix itself. Note, this is obviously the easiest of the three things. 3. A strange, shimmery vortex will surround you and you will be pulled into an alternate dimension. If you find yourself here, this is what you to do. You will find yourself in a twisted replica of your house. You will need to go to your room, where you will find the 4 items listed that you will need for this part. Take them. Exit your house. Outside will be an evil-looking version of our world. Red sky, gray sun, dark orange plants, and an ever-present thin vermilion mist. You must go to the nearest public building, i.e. a school, mall, gas station, etc. Use the key on the door and enter. The key will fit in the lock. If you did not get a key, climb in through a window. Upon entering, find a room with only one entrance. Sit down and begin reading the book. If you do not get a book, just sit down and be bored / scared. You will hear footsteps outside of your door, at the same time within the next hour. Don't look up from the book. After you can no longer hear the footsteps, count to 250 out loud. Every 10 numbers, you will hear another footstep closer and closer to the door. Upon reaching 250, you will hear a knock on the door. If there are 3 knocks, open the door. If there are 4, say, "I forbid you," twice, then open the door. You will see a stone statue of someone you love deeply outside the door. It could be a family member, best friend, romantic partner, or even a fictional character. Smash its head to bits with a sledgehammer or pickaxe. If it is a female, also destroy the left hand. If you do not get the hammer or pick, push the statue over. Exit the building from the main entrance you came in. It will be night. Look at the moon. It will be either pink or green, and either full or half. If it is pink and half, pull out the phone and call your third most recent contact. Pink and full. Pull out the phone and dial a random number. Before they pick up, bite through your tongue. If you do not get the device, pretend to do the things above. Green and half. Strip off all your clothing and sprint back to your house. Don't look behind you no matter what. Green and full. To put it bluntly, you're bound. You'll be dead within half an hour. If it is one of the first 3, you will wake up in front of the television and you can continue the ritual. After this, you will have reached Channel Infinity. What you must do now is up to you. If you go to the guide function, you will see shows listed such as The Meaning of Life or How to Acquire True Love. Choose one. Note, the more people you have outside the door with you determines the revelations that are the show. The more people, the better chance you have of seeing shows with more life-changing results. Or if you keep watching the static without going to guide or breaking eye contact with the television, you will see a series of images that will, if deciphered, reveal the answer to your greatest question. There are, at this point, many options, too many to write here. Just do what you feel you must, and something will happen. The overwhelming majority of things will be good, but some will be bad. You may leave the room at any point. However, there are two catches. You may never speak of what you learned after accessing Channel Infinity, and you may only reach Channel Infinity 4 times in your life. I hope you find the experience enlightening. Written by Jet Cyber. song in the background of that story was called Through the Eyes of the Dead by Haunted Corpse off the album Dirges for the Dead. A link in the description. Anyway, I don't want to keep you any longer than I have to. I really like doing these scary stories, so on with it! And I just want to say, before we get to the next story, one more thing that I just remembered, and I'm adding this in post after everything's done. Instead of leaving individual links for songs, I'm just going to leave you the link to the whole Dirges for the Dead album by Haunted Corpse, which has all the music that we're using in the background of these stories. Anyway, back to the show.
The Tub Girl.
Who is the tub girl? The sweet voice of my 4-year-old Jessica asked from down the hall. I panicked, horrified she'd stumbled across an innocence-shattering image of internet filth. Do not click on that, honey! I shouted, accidentally banging my forehead on the underside of the kitchen cabinet I lay under to work on the sink's drain. Panic pumped adrenaline into my bloodstream as I jumped to my feet and ran into the living room. I expected to see a vulgar image on an iPad in her hands, her eyes wide and her mind already corrupt. My wife and I only let her play with the tablet on the weekend, a little reward like the Saturday cartoons of our day. We set all the parental controls possible and even removed the browser, but even the most vigilant parent knows childproofing translates to challenge accepted to a kid. I raced over to see her small, curious face standing there in the front of the door of the bathroom. I breathed out heavily in relief. She was talking about her bathtub. What do you mean, sweetie? I asked, trying to mask my worry with a smile. The girl in the tub. Who is she? Jess asked, her wide blue eyes full of genuine wonder under her damp corn silk hair. What girl? I asked as I walked up to her and nearly gave her hair a tussling before realizing my hands were still greasy from the pipes. The quiet one who repeats what I say, Jess said. I walked over to the bathroom, the overprotective fathering me, eager to relieve any concern. I leaned in to see the empty tub beaded with bathwater. My eyes landed on the drain, a mere 1.5-inch hole. I entertained the notion of a pixie hiding in the drain for a second, and shook my head and smiled as I understood what she probably heard. Ah, it's just an echo, honey, I began to explain. Sound travels in waves, and when the waves bounce back, I use my hands to gesture. They make an echo. You are hearing your own voice moments later, like a boomerang. Jess nodded, then scrunched her brows in confusion again. What's a boomerang? She asked in a sweet giggle at the sound of the word. I smiled and bent my knees to be on eye level with her. I have one in the attic from when I was a kid, and we can play outside with it as soon as Daddy finishes fixing the sink, okay? I asked. The wonder in her eyes gave me all the fuel I needed to allay my worries. Promise? She asked as she raised her eyebrows. Promise. I returned to the kitchen with a relief you will never know until you think your 4-year-old daughter has stumbled across some scat porn. The kitchen drain had been backing up ever since we bought this house a few years back, when Jess was just a newborn. The two plumbers I'd hired simply chalked it up to hard water, naming a price nearly 5 digits long to rip out and reinstall new piping. That was a hard no. My wife and I were in the hole after mortgaging the house as it is, so I'd been up all the time, working with my little project. I shimmied back under the kitchen cabinet and made sure the water valves were off as I used the wide-mouthed wrench to loosen the traditional lock nut strainer, which I twisted with all my might. When I finally pulled loose the U-pipe of the sink trap, a black tendril of wet hair plopped down on my face. I coughed with disgust and crawled out from under there, spitting away the foul taste. I peered back under, staring at the long curl of
oil black hair with both revulsion and disbelief. It was a lot of hair, inky black, at least 8 inches in length. At least that was what was visible. I wonder if the previous owner had run a salon out of their kitchen. The tingle in the back of my neck intensified to full-on dread as I watched the sodden clump of hair suck back into the drain pipe, out of view and further into the pipes beneath the flooring. It had to have been some suction from the clog shifting down the tubes. I tried to rationalize, but then I heard the scream. Jess. I ran over to the hallway, feet thumping on the old wooden floors as I arrived in the bathroom. Jess was standing in front of the bathroom door, holding her elbows tight, her pouting mouth shivering as she began to wail, and fresh tears drew rivers down her rosy cheeks. "I'm here," I said, holding her in my arms. "What's wrong, sweetie?" I asked, feeling her warm tears seep onto my shoulder through my shirt. She just continued to loudly cry as she pointed to the bathroom, the source of her distress. I walked back over to the bathroom and froze in my tracks, looking at the tub to what was inside. There were two long, thin fingers poking out of the drain, grayish-looking, hooked talons, water-clogged, yet impossibly slim. Foggy white fingernails grew out into translucent, and then they frayed. They looked inhuman, but unlike any animal paw I'd ever seen, and my mind raced to understand how it had gotten there. Maybe it was part of some toy or some prop from a past Halloween, I hoped. Then they moved. The clawing fingers began twisting around and scratching inside of the porcelain tub with a high-pitched sound that wobbled my legs. The whole deformed hand came out, similar to a webless pink bat's wing. Its impossibly slender fingers, pale and pruned. Its skin was like soggy, crumpled paper over warped twigs of bone. I yelped as it splayed and reached out. A raspy gurgling, deep and croaking, bubbled up from the bathroom sink. Jess screamed, only then alerting me that she'd been watching from behind my legs. I spun around and grabbed her shoulders, telling her as calmly as I could to go upstairs to her room while Daddy fixes it. But I knew there was no fixing it. I retreated, staring at the hideous claw as I slammed the bathroom door closed. I called the police and watched the door nervously until they arrived, all the while hearing those unsettling gurgling sounds from the ringing squeaks and slaps of damp flesh on the tub basin. After the responding officer spoke to me and investigated, animal control was called. I spent half an hour in the living room, consoling Jess as they tried to determine what it was. Soon they left, and more calls were made and more cars arrived. The animal control vans drove off, quickly replaced by ambulances and police cruisers that lit up our street with flashing red and blue lights that drew my neighbors to their windows to gawk. One of the EMT workers choked out, "Dear God," and ran from the bathroom in horror. Soon after, my daughter and I were escorted outside the house and advised to book a hotel for a few days. A detective who arrived tried to shield us from the emerging details, but I overheard what they'd found from a traumatized paramedic who was crying like a child on the porch as he waited for his cab to arrive. I then listened to each horrible detail of what they discovered within the pipes of my home. By what they gathered, a previous owner of the home appeared to have given birth to a very premature infant while in the tub, and it had been pushed either intentionally or accidentally down into the drain. The premature infant had gotten lodged in the connecting pipe as it traveled further beneath the flooring, which intersected with the drain from the sink to mix together as gray water. Food particles from the kitchen drain had provided nutrients each time they'd been washed down into the drain, keeping her alive. I cringed as I listened to the details, trying my best not to let my legs collapse beneath me. Details like a ring of mashed teeth protruded from the tube of malformed gums, allowing her to feed as she grew. Her body had formed in the confines of that narrow prison, a crushed, serpentine deformation that grew longer and longer, year after unimaginable year. I listened in horror as I heard a paramedic mention the tub girl had been living, if you can call it that, in the drain for what they estimate to have been nearly 20 years. By the time the cab arrived, I was shaking and in shock, only wishing my initial fear had been correct. The song in that, oops, sorry about that. I was just playing with my microphone there. I was, just trying to move it closer to my face. Here we go. The song in that story was called Haunting the Crypt, I believe, by Haunted Corpse, as usual. Again, I'm just going to be leaving a link for the whole album instead of individual songs. However, I will be leaving links to individual stories, so that's good. I believe, I could be wrong about what I'm going to be doing next, but for what I think I'm going to be doing, I read this before on an earlier Scary Stories episode. I don't remember what it was, but this one is one of my favorite scary stories ever, so enjoy, I guess. I just want you to know that I've read it before on another podcast, another Scary Stories one, but I just hope it's better than the last time, because I'm putting a lot more work into this Scary Stories episode than I have on all the other ones combined, probably. So, yeah. Anyway, enjoy the next story.
I found a videotape on the beach a few weeks ago, written by a haunted tape.
A few details before I start my story. I live in Northern California in a small townhouse with my girlfriend. I've decided to change the names of both people and places, just to be cautious. I don't want anyone going out to the beach I was at trying to dig up clues and instead find the trouble that I found. I'm sorry this is so long, I've tried to keep it as brief as possible. You have to understand that I've barely slept at all in days and it's difficult for me to keep my thoughts in order. Saturday, March 26th. John and I found the camcorder half buried in the sand on Stinson Beach. When I picked it up out of the sand, water leaked out from inside the camcorder. Sand was packed into every crevice and the battery pack was missing. We dried it off with a beach towel and popped the cassette drive open. There was a digital cassette cartridge still inside the drive. It had a yellow plastic head and a Panasonic logo, but no label or sticker attached. It seemed like the camcorder itself was pretty much trashed, but we figured it still might be possible to recover the data on the tape itself. I had an older Sony digital camcorder at home that used the same type of tape. I took the tape and camcorder inside with me when John dropped me off at home later that day. I set it down on my computer desk and forgot about it for almost a week. Thursday, March 31st. John came over again next Thursday and saw it on my desk. I told him I had forgotten about it and haven't even tried to play back the tape yet. We popped it into my Sony camcorder and hooked it up to my PC's FireWire port, opened it to Roxio's video capture application, and hoped we'd get some sweet kicks out of all this name dropping, and told it to scan the tape for footage. Only one scene appeared on the screen. I will describe it to you as best as I can recall. A few feet in front of the camera is a woman. Her back is toward the camera, and she is seen down a narrow dirt path, walking, limping. Possibly it was a deer trail. Tall dry grass and small bushes line either side of the path. Based on the lighting, it is most likely sometime in the early morning or evening. The sky is cloudless and tinged with a soft orange color. Other than the shuffle of footsteps, the only thing that can be heard is seagulls crying and the soft sound of ocean waves breaking against the shore in the distance. She's wearing what used to be a one-piece swimsuit. The top half have been ripped or cut apart and now hangs down off her hips. She is naked from the waist up. Dozens of ugly red welts and cuts across her back. It looks like she has been whipped or badly beaten with a stick. A length of thin rope, more like twine, has been used to bind her hands behind her back. The twine is so wound tight against her wrists that you can see her hands have begun to turn a shade of blue from lack of circulation. The twine is cutting into her skin and small lines of blood have run down her fingers and hands, dripping onto the dirt trail behind her. During the course of the scene, she only takes a few dozen steps. The clip is only 30 seconds long. Right before the clip ends, a man's voice can be heard. "Are you filming? You better not be filming yet. I told you to wait until we get inside." And then the clip ends. Both John and I were unsettled by that one short scene on the tape. It seemed authentic. Someone's home video gone horribly wrong. I tried to copy the clip onto my computer, but every time we played the file back, it was just a mess of scrambled green lines with no audio. John took the tape with him when he went home later that evening. He wanted to try and use his MacBook and parents' camcorder to see if he was able to recover the clip onto his computer. He said maybe it was a problem with my FireWire cable. It was the last time I ever saw him. Friday, April 1st. At this point, I can't think of any unusual happenings. Normal Friday workday, no different from dozens of other Fridays before it. I called John to ask him about the tape, but he said he hadn't had time to look at the tape again, but he was going to stop by his parents' house after work and borrow the camcorder for the weekend. Sunday, April 3rd. John calls me. It was in the evening, sometime after 7, I think. He sounds excited and tells me he was able to get the clip to save onto his MacBook. The video plays back, but the sound is missing. I tell him to upload the video online, but he wants more time to try and get the audio working too. Wednesday, April 6th. Unable to get a hold of John for 2 days. Calls are going straight to voicemail. Finally, he calls me on Wednesday, just as I'm getting ready to leave from work to go home. I don't think I noticed it at the time, but looking back on events, his voice sounded odd. There was almost no inflection to his speech. It was flat and emotionless. I thought he was calling about the tape, but when I asked, he told me that it wasn't important anymore. He said he had found something and we needed to go back to the beach. It takes almost 2 hours to drive out from Stinson to my house, and I told them there was no way I was going to be able to get out there on a weeknight after work. And even if I could, it would be nearing dark by the time we got out there. For some reason, this seemed to make him angry. I promised I'd go on Saturday with him, but that wasn't good enough. He said he needed to go that night, that there was something very important. He kept saying that he had something to show me. I asked what, but he said I had to see it for myself. Finally, he called me a stubborn dick and hung up. Thursday, April 7th. John won't answer my calls. His voicemail says his inbox is full and won't accept any new messages. Friday, April 8th. When I get up to take a shower in the morning, there's a small amount of wet sand spread out in the bottom of the tub. I think that maybe Sarah has only now gotten to rinsing her bathing suits out from the time we were at the beach 2 days ago. Although I don't see her suit hanging up to dry anywhere in the bathroom, it's mildly puzzling, but I forgot about it as soon as I leave for work. Only now do I realize that it was the start of some strange occurrences that were about to drive me into a frantic state I am today. Later at work, my phone chimes indicating that I have a voicemail. I didn't notice the phone ringing, but this isn't entirely unusual as I don't have the best reception inside the office. It's certainly not the first time this has happened. I dial into my voicemail and it's a message from John. He sounds calm again. No hint of previous anger. I'm going back to Stinson tomorrow morning. Meet me there. There is something I want to show you. I finish my day at work and go home. I decide to tell Sarah about the tape and how it's making John act strange. But when I get home, she still hasn't gotten back from work. I make myself dinner and watch some TV, and still no sign of her. I call her work, and they tell me that she left when her shift ended at 4. I call her mom in LA to ask if she's heard any word from Sarah, but she hasn't and seems as worried as I am. I fall asleep on the couch watching TV. Saturday, April 9th. Sarah was still gone when I woke up Saturday morning. There was no way I can go meet with John with Sarah missing. I go online and try to find any reports of traffic accidents on Friday evening, but there's nothing. Finally, I decide to call the sheriff's department. They tell me I can file a missing persons report. There's no waiting time to do so. I gave them all the details and they promised to call me back as soon as they hear something. Sarah's mom calls me again in the morning. She is very upset that no one can find any trace of her daughter. Sunday, April 10th. Awake from the most vivid nightmare in the early hours of Sunday morning. In the dream, I'm sleeping in my bed, spooned up against Sarah. I wake up and I'm freezing cold. The bed is totally soaked with nearly frozen water, and it reeks of salt and seaweed. Everything is wet. The mattress, pillows, and blankets. Everything. My arms are wrapped around Sarah, and her body is just as cold as the water. Possibly even colder. I prop myself up and turn on the lamp next to the bed. Sarah is asleep on her side, with her back to me, and I see that her arms have been bound behind her with twine. The knot is so tight that it's turned her hands blue, and there's blood seeping from the cuts in her wrists. I'm paralyzed by absolute terror, the kind that you only experience in a dream. Slowly, Sarah rolls from her side onto her back, and I can see her face. It's hers, but it looks deformed. Her face is too broad, and her nose looks flattened and smashed, almost like she's pressed up against a piece of glass. Her eyes are bright and shiny. Her mouth is locked into a terribly wide grin. There are far too many teeth inside her mouth. She tells me there's something she needs to show me. I wake up in an empty bed, bathed in sweat and tangled in the covers. I swear I can still smell the ocean. Eventually, I leave the house to go get food. On my return, I notice wet, sandy footprints leading from the grassy lawn up to my front door. There's a wet piece of twine wrapped tightly around the door handle. When I untie it, I notice my hands have been stained a dull red. Monday, April 11th. I couldn't sleep. I called into work and told them that I was sick. I lay on the couch all day watching TV and had no appetite. At some point, I must have dozed off on the couch with the TV on. I wake up and the TV is blaring noise. A local news report is on and the news report is yelling, almost screaming his news report. It's a story about hundreds of dead bodies washing up on the beach last night, all of them with their hands bound behind their backs. He looks directly into the camera, almost like he's looking right at me and says, "You need to get down to the beach. There's something I need to show you." The TV turns off. My apartment is freezing and I can smell salt water. Tuesday, April 12th. That's my birthday. Another night of fitful sleeping, but at least no more dreams. I'm exhausted from stress and lack of sleep. It's difficult to keep my thoughts in order. I called work and told them I was still sick. For some reason, I don't want them to know about my missing girlfriend. In the evening, a deputy from the sheriff's office called me. He told me that they had found Sarah's car abandoned in a parking lot near Stinson Beach. I tried asking him more questions, but he seemed very elusive and wouldn't give me any straight answers. I hope they don't think I'm a suspect in her disappearance. He told me that I needed to meet with them at Stinson Beach first thing tomorrow morning, so that they could ask me some questions. Shouldn't they want to question me at the sheriff's office? Before he hung up, he told me it was imperative that I be at Stinson tomorrow. He said there was something he needed to show me. I called Sarah's parents' house, and her dad answered the phone. I told them about the deputy finding her car. He said it wasn't important anymore, and that everything was going to be okay. "Just make sure you meet with the deputy tomorrow morning, okay? There's something you need to see." Tuesday, April 13th. Another nightmare. God, I hope it was a nightmare. I'm so tired from not sleeping, it's hard to tell what's real and what isn't. In the dream, I was laying awake in my bed again. Clock said 3:28 a.m. I woke up to a soft tapping noise coming from the bedroom window. I tried to ignore it and go back to sleep. I hear the tap two more times, and then Sarah's voice. "Walter, I know you're in there. Please, let me in. There's something I want to show you. Walter?" The bedroom window is on the second floor. I ran downstairs, my gaze locked on the floor, afraid of what I might see outside the window, even though the ventilation blinds were drawn and half closed. I fled into the small guest bedroom / computer office on the first floor and locked the door right behind me. I didn't sleep the rest of the night. My house is filled with the smell of seawater again, stronger than before. Wednesday, April 14th. I am terrified and nearly mad with the need for sleep. I don't know what to do or who to ask for help. I know I can't stay locked in this room all day. I decided to write this all down and post it online. Someplace where people can read it but possibly won't take it seriously. I'm afraid I won't make it back home ever again. But I have to go down to Stinson to talk with the sheriff. He's already called twice asking me where I am and if he shouldn't just send someone to pick me up and drive me down there. Hopefully everything will work out okay, and I'll be back home later this evening. Addition. Monday, April 18th. I feel a little silly for sounding so paranoid earlier. I finally found John and Sarah. Everything is going to be fine now. There wasn't any reason to be worried in the first place. Although it did take me a while to find their bodies. I had to wait until night, when tide was at its lowest. This will probably be my last post. It's hard to type because my hands are so numb. The twine is so tight you lose all the feeling in your fingertips. If you're ever in Marin County, California, come down to Stinson Beach. There is something you need to see.
Song in that one was called The Haunted House or something. I can't remember. Yeah, that was The Haunted House. Next story.
All right, now for this is the last story of the episode. No music or nothing, because it's a real one, and we're going to be interviewing... Last episode, we interviewed Tammy, and this episode, we're interviewing Chris, my father, who also has had a ghost encounter. From what I know, it is a lot shorter than what she had, but still, good thing to have them. All right, state your name and stuff. I already said it. But.
Can you hear me eating popcorn?
I didn't notice it, but...
Okay, good. Hi, my name is Chris, and I've seen a ghost before? I don't know. See, like, there's a whole, before we start, I guess there's a whole lot of different theories behind this whole thing, right?
Yeah.
You know, like, so, like, there's, is there ghosts, or is there just people that believe there is that can see them? Or is there, you know, like, there's a lot of variation.
Yeah, there's a lot of things.
See, with my experience, and it was kind of fucked up, because I'm a little bit of a negative.
Skeptic?
When it comes to, yeah, skeptic. Good call. When it comes to stuff like this, and it happened roughly... we've been here 5 years, living here?
Yep.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah. Probably 4 years ago.
6 years now.
Huh. Yeah. Yes. And I was in the backyard, discing.
Let me give the listeners a little bit of backstory here. So, right now, we live on, like, a little piece of farmland. We're surrounded by trees, and we have, like, a little plot of land just beside where we live right now. And my dad was discing. Chris was discing. Yeah, what if you don't know what that is? It's like a trailer with little metal discs
turning up dirt.
Yeah,
killing the weeds. I was trying to open up some area in the back 40 there, and I was doing a little bit of discing, and I was just cruising around, making my rounds, and knocking down the weeds, and we were gonna eventually plant trees and stuff back there, whatever, and kind of just do whatever the fuck we want. And then there's kind of a peculiar spot, because we're between two water runs, essentially, and they kind of fall into each other in the middle of our yard, and then they go across the road into a culvert. And now there's two bush lines that we happen to own, and then one bush line, there's like a little opening at the end, and I was cruising in my tractor and fucking just giving her shit. I think I might even been drinking a beer.
Mm-hmm.
Go figure.
Yeah.
You know
what's new.
Yeah, so I'm cruising along, and then all of a sudden, boom, I see, what the fuck is that? There's an old dude standing there. It caught me off guard, and I'm like, what the fuck? I don't know, he was just standing in the opening between in the one bush line between, you know where I'm talking about, mm-hmm. And he was just sitting there, and he was just staring, kind of like leaning up against a tree, then he would be standing there, and then just like, kind of freaked me the fuck out, because I was on the other side of that particular field, and I'd come back, and I wouldn't see him because I'm heading the other direction. I turn around. Fuck, he's still there. Huh. Weird. Maybe I should go talk to him or what? And
yeah.
So, and then I keep going. And the same thing. He just... I pictured him. I could exactly see who the fuck he was. And then all of a sudden, I get a little bit closer. About halfway into the little plot I was doing there. And then all of a sudden, gone.
So,
I was like, huh... So it kind of freaked me out a little bit. I didn't say nothing for a little while, and I started talking to the missus. And, you know, and I explained what the fuck happened, and she's like, oh, weird. So then the people that lived near here, and I talked to one of the people there, and I kind of described who the fuck this guy looked like. And it's like, oh, no, that was the guy that used to own the place, for sure. Like, to a fucking T. It was like, oh, weird. It was just, it blew my mind. So I don't know, like, is, so it kind of leaves the discussion open to, are you here and then gone? Or are you here? Do you stay? Do you become someone else? Or what yeah. the fuck? It totally blew my mind, because, yeah, I described exactly what he looked like, and I've never seen a picture of him, though. That's the thing. I've never seen a picture of the dude, but I described what he looked like to a person that has met him and seen him and interacted with him for many moons, mm-hmm. and they said, yep, that sounds about it.
Huh.
So, yeah, that was my encounter. Other than that, I've never really had an encounter with the paranormal, per se, but that was my one thing, and I, you know, like you would think, like, nah, I'm just making this up in my head, but like, well, why the fuck would I make this up in my head? I really don't give a fuck. I actually fucking seen this, right? So yeah, it blew my mind. It's like, what the fuck? So yeah, I have to stand by that. That's what I've seen. Apparently, that's who it was. I don't know. I guess I got to find a picture of him, because
that'd be cool. I'm interested now, but I want to see a picture too. So, what I was thinking, I've been thinking about this since you told me this story, this encounter you've had, is now everyone around you would consider you a very hardworking dude, right? Like, I know I do.
Well, I like to give her.
Yeah,
you know, there's no doubt about it.
You go to very far lengths to do your work and what you want to do. We moved out here because you wanted to.
I needed to work more.
Yeah, you wanted to be different. You know, you didn't want to be like everyone else and go
it's like
9 to 5 and just leave it at that.
The sense of gratification of raising your own animals and having your own, built your own house and having your own yard and all that kind of stuff. And so that's kind of like the reason why we would have, and it's learning different values and teaching my kids those particular values and the understanding of why we do stuff like that and how we should be raised, rather than the alternative, which
just living in the city. And
that's exactly it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so what, like I was saying, I've been thinking about this since the first time you told me. Do you think, my interpretation of what happened is, do you think that old guy out there was watching you as a form of, I had the word on the tip of my tongue, form of approval of you doing,
you know what? I just wish that I could have my grandpa watch me cut wood.
Yeah.
And have it ready, you know, set it all up for the winter and show him what we do. Just it's one of those things. Yeah, I don't know if it's a form of approval or if it's, you know, just, I don't know.
Wariness of someone else living,
like,
on
watching
his
that
property.
Shit, it's like fucking, so that's what I was thinking I wanted to have happen. But then when I'm doing, I don't know, you know, like work around the yard, that would include some type of farming action, you know, disking and stuff like that. So maybe it was the old guy just kind of like looking and saying, hey, yeah, okay, you're doing all right.
Yeah.
If you're fucking up, I'd let you know.
Yeah, and
he didn't fuck up too badly, so I didn't say nothing. Because he didn't say nothing.
No, he didn't.
He just gave me the eyes.
It seems as though, because he didn't come back, you've never seen him before again, have you?
No. It's like, he's like, you know, maybe it was like, okay, somebody moved on my property. Because since they died or moved on, nobody lived here until we moved in.
Yeah.
So, like, maybe he was just hanging out, making sure, like, what the fuck, see what's going on, and then, and that could be, too, like, maybe, like, because, like I said before, is there really ghosts and apparitions and different types of things, or is it what you believe that could happen, or is it, you know what I mean?
Yeah, it's definitely a subject,
you know, and
that
I think
can be...
that, yeah, like, perhaps he could just be, like, sitting back there, like, okay. See, he's fucking disking this up. That's cool. He's doing an okay job. I would probably do it a different way, but he doesn't look stupid. And he did his thing, or you know, he was looked at it and he was happy with it, and then he was gone. So then he was gone. What the fuck? You know, like, so I thought there would be, is there going to be any type of interaction or what the fuck? And then, nope, nothing. That was it. And then just the weirdest part was, though, is just knowing that he was there, and it was like, it wasn't just one pass that was going with the tractors. Three? And then, fuck.
Huh.
Still there. Still the same guy. Fucking had like blue overalls on, like, you know, cool. Like a farmer suit, like, day, like whatever. And then gone.
Weird. Never
seen him again.
And
so
this,
maybe he just like finally said, okay, now I know somebody's taking after my,
someone
taking care of my fucking, my little piece of homeland here, my little homestead. I'm cool, and now I can go.
And so this was like at the very beginning when we moved here, right?
Yeah.
So, yeah, that would...
I've never seen him again, though.
Yeah, to me, that seems like it would be. Like, he's giving you some sort of approval. At the very beginning, he's wary, you know. And this is what I do believe. I truly believe that this is what happened. This is how it went. He's wary of new people coming to live on his land. And at the very beginning, he's watching
that,
you work.
When this becomes your... Yeah. You know, like, he probably come over... Well, maybe second generation. Maybe not. I don't know. I don't know the whole history behind the family that started this up, this little ranch here, but they kind of created it. We took it over, right? So you got to be cognizant of that. You have to make sure that, you know, like, we're not going to make too many drastic changes.
Yeah.
Although we did kind of change the lay of the land here a little bit, and it's fit and function of what we want it to do versus
but we didn't
what
make
they
it
wanted
worse.
It to do. But we kind of have it. Yeah, we didn't make it worse. We didn't turn into goddamn hippies or nothing and making it all weird and shit. So yeah, I guess it's kind of like we got the golden ticket to proceed, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, so.
That's cool. Well, yeah.
So that's my encounter. I thought it was kind of cool. It's probably like the most biggest fucking deal in the world, but that was it. And, I don't know. Like, it wasn't scary. It wasn't fucking peculiar. I wasn't freaked out or not. Well, I guess it was like, this is kind of weird. But, you know, I was probably drinking a beer, driving a tractor, having a good time.
Yeah.
You know, enjoying, watching scenery, you know.
Yeah.
Shit like that. And there it is. What the fuck?
Huh. Now, I have a question. Did you feel a presence? Did you feel that he was there before you saw him?
Now, this, I don't know about this. Like, because it's kind of in a low spot near a water run.
Yeah.
So, like, you'll be cruising along, and all of a sudden, like, you'll always feel that. You kind of feel like that little bit of a cool draft through a certain spot. So, I don't know. I would have to say no. That's not what... took me to look exactly for him. I actually seen it out of the corner of my eye and said, oh, so there he is. Like, that's...
So, but what I understand what you mean by the cold draft and stuff, but what I meant... That's not what I meant.
Like, I didn't feel a weird or negative energy.
Yeah.
If that's what you're saying.
Yeah.
No, I did not.
You didn't feel any sort of change,
fucking,
just regular?
So, I don't know, maybe it's my brain's just going crazy. Or maybe it's whatever, but just fucking just cruise along, and, you know, like I said, just looking at the scenery, and then all of a sudden look over, and there's a guy standing there. He shouldn't be standing. I don't know why the fuck he'd be standing there. That's a weird spot to stand.
Yeah.
How the fuck did he get there? That was my question, and he's kind of old, kind of weird.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, like, very peculiar. Whatever, I'll just keep going and see what happens. Maybe if he wants to talk, he'll come and talk to me. I don't know how the fuck he got there, but why the fuck he'd want to be there was, you know, the question. Then turn around, go back for the second pass, and, still there. Just kind of eyeballing you. I locked eyes with him. I was like, fuck, weird. All right, keep going. Third pass, and there he was again. But he was kind of like in a different spot every time. Like, not in a different spot. Like
different
standing
position.
There. Like, you know, like, it's just, it's that long ago where, like, Was he just sitting there with his arms crossed, or was he like leaning up against a tree or whatever? But he just kind of like, he just moved a little bit.
And yeah.
Fourth pass, just gone.
Like weird.
Fucking wind, man. It was weird.
Huh.
Yep.
Cool.
So yeah, so I don't know. It still doesn't make me believe in Okay. You watch a fucking movie.
Yeah.
Like a ghost movie.
Yeah.
Okay, like, yeah. Well, those are meant to scare you. So, is that how it's supposed to be? Is that how we take the persona of what a ghost is supposed to be? Or
yeah.
Whatever. What do they call it? Afterlife?
An apparition or a spirit?
Yeah, whatever the fuck it is.
Yeah.
And so is that it? Or is it just, you know, something like that? I don't know. Fuck. It sure as fuck didn't worry me. I'll tell you
good.
That.
Good. That's yeah. That's...
So...
So that means he wasn't disapproving. Typically, you'd...
Well, no, that's right.
Yeah, typically so, you'd feel...
but
according
as far
to,
as you're like, I'm not... I wasn't scared. It was just like, kind of weird. Because I was just minding my own business.
Yeah.
Because I like to do that from time to time. Like, all the time, I guess.
Yeah.
You know?
That's why we moved out here.
That's right. So, yeah. So that's it, man. That's all I got to tell you.
Cool.
And, that's how it went down, and I will fucking hold that story to the grave, because that's, I know, it was there, he was there, it happened, there ain't no fucking around.
Cool. And you're okay if I publish this? This is, just to make sure?
I don't give a shit.
Okay, cool.
Yeah.
Have you ever told anyone else this story other than the people around you? Like, anyone at work, or you, any friends that you have?
No, I don't think so. Yes, it's one of those things too. It's like, oh yeah, whatever. Like,
yeah,
fucking this freak thinks he's fucking, you know, whatever. Nah, it's not even necessary. I just never thought it would be
it never
necessary
came up.
Or never really come up. But I don't know. I've told my people that I know like closely.
Yeah.
That it did happen. Nobody called me a tool or a fuck up or nothing, and that's kind of cool.
Yeah,
but I don't know, I just saw what I saw. You can't tell me I didn't, and I guess no. I can't tell you that I did, because you didn't see it either, so.
But what would be the point of making it up? You're not telling everyone trying to get publicity.
Oh, I sure as fuck am not. I don't really give a fuck if anybody believes me or not. I just seen what I seen, and that's what I'm telling you here right now today on PhenomenaNations.com.
Phenomenanations.org. Well, I'm
Phenomena Nations podcast.
I'm working on getting a website.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, anything else to add then?
No, I think that's about it. Other than it's like it's. I truly believe that there may or may not be, but it's all about what you believe, how you believe it, what you see, what you want to see, how you think, how you act. It, that's about it. Like, I don't know. Is it real? In my eyes, yes. In some, they might call me crazy. You know what?
Yeah.
Fuck them. I don't care.
Cool.
I'm cool being crazy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
A lot of things that I do, people think I'm crazy. So, welcome to the club.
Me? It's a pretty cool club, man.
Yeah, man.
Yeah. Anybody else want to join? Why don't you send an email or
join the crazy club.
Join the club, and we want to hear the stories. We want to publish them.
We do want to hear your stories. Anyone with any sort of true ghost story or any sort, even if it's not a true one, a good one that you found on the internet, send them over. Well, if you want to send me an audio file of you telling it, that would be even better, actually. But, you know, up to you. Anyway, thank you for being on this episode, Chris.
No, thanks for having me.
No problem. I'm Max Pichette of Phenomena Nations Podcast. We'll be right back.
You were just listening to another episode of the greatest podcast on the face of the earth, Phenomena Nations Podcast, hosted by me, Max Pichette. Phenomena Nations Podcast is a part of the Phenomena Nations Podcast Network. Obviously. Other podcasts on the network include The Poisonous Podcast, Timmy T Talks with Luke, How About That, eh? And Chilling Deer the Podcast. We hope to add more soon, so if you want to join, shoot us an email. Tune in next episode for more fun and truth. Don't forget to say no to mandatory masks and party on.